I had one of the best dreams last night. It was one of those dreams where I could fly. Do any of you have flying dreams? Yeah? There's one person nodding. That's awesome. That's great. Now, in this dream, there was kind of like a spiritual teacher. First, he flew around and showed me how, and then I did it too. And then he gave me like kind of a lesson that helped me fly better. And when I woke up, that lesson, there's a sutta which is the most similar to the lesson. So I'm going to try to read that now here. And this is one of my favorite suttas, by the way. You know who this teacher was pretty similar to is, it's not the same person, but it's kind of similar. There's a man named Brother Law, and he taught some of the people here Reiki lessons. Brother Law is similar to the guy, this teacher in the dream. Okay, so this is Anguttara Nikaya 4's 1.78. And the title is The Reservoir. Okay, so a reservoir is like a big tank of water. Very big. Like when you're up at SBS and you look down into the valley, you can see this big kind of man-made lake. I believe that is a reservoir. And, you know, water is held there for the whole city to use. Okay. Bhikkhus, there are these four kinds of persons found existing in the world. What for? One, here a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the cessation of personal existence. As he is doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Suppose a man were to grab hold of a branch with his hand smeared with gum. Okay, like sticky. Think of like chewing gum, sticky. His hand would stick to it, adhere to it, and be fastened to it. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. And as he's doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. Okay, this is person number two. He attends to the cessation of personal existence. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Suppose a man were to grab hold of a branch with a clean hand. His hand would not stick to it, adhere to it, or be fastened to it. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the cessation of personal existence. Person number three. Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the breaking up of ignorance. As he is doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady, and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. Suppose there were a reservoir many years old. A man would close off its inlets and open up its outlets. Okay, the inlets, that's how the water gets in. The outlets, that's how the water gets out. So the man closes off the inlets, the water can't get in, and he opens up the outlets so the water can get out. And sufficient rain would not fall. In such a case, it could not be expected that this reservoir's embankment would break. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. As he is doing so, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady and focus on it. This bhikkhu cannot be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. So when he attends to the breaking up of ignorance, his mind does not launch out toward it, acquire confidence, become steady and focus on it. Okay, purpose number four. Here, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the breaking up of ignorance. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. Suppose there was a reservoir many years old. A man would open up its inlets and close off its outlets, and sufficient rain would fall. In such a case, it could be expected that this reservoir's embankments would break. So too, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in a certain peaceful liberation of mind. He attends to the breaking up of ignorance. As he is doing so, his mind launches out toward it, acquires confidence, becomes steady, and focuses on it. This bhikkhu can be expected to attain the breaking up of ignorance. These bhikkhus are the four kinds of persons found existing in the world. Okay, so I'll just revisit these four analogies really quickly. So when we look at persons number one and two, the big difference here is whether they had gum on their hand or not. Okay, so when you grab a branch, if you have gum on your hand, the branch sticks. If you have no gum on your hand, the branch doesn't stick. And so if we have a strong sense of personal identity, then that's like having gum on our hand. And we won't attain to the ending of personal existence. The concept of anatta is like not self. Seeing that there isn't any permanent lasting self anywhere to be found where we might look. So that's when we break up this illusion of a permanent existing self, is when we break through to anatta. And if we don't do that, then we will have a sense of personal existence. This is when we don't see anatta. To me, anatta is a really big deal, because that's how we don't have the gum on our hand. We will have this gum on our hand otherwise, and the branch will stick to our hand. Okay? So anatta gets rid of that gum on our hand. Now, when we compare the third and fourth kind of person, it's very important how these inlets are opened and closed, okay? If we're ever going to get the water to not only fill up the reservoir, but spill over. And we also need rain to fill that reservoir too. I think rain here would be suggestive of meditation, where one can attain samadhi, or at least the Brahmaviharas. That samadhi is oftentimes compared to rain. It's compared to water. That's an analogy you see many times in the suttas. Now, as to the inlets and outlets, what that suggests to me is sort of like the decisions we make in our lives, what activities we do. Okay, so every time we do wholesome things, helpful things, we have good habits. That's like opening up the inlets in our life, which let in water, and we want that. You know, any good habit we can keep, like, let's say, good sleep habits, or some exercise, or eating well, you know, avoiding unwholesome, you know, unhelpful kind of junk food. Even who we choose to talk to, or how we talk to people. What we expose ourselves to, this all has to do with the inlets, how carefully we live our life, how heedfully. Now, as to outlets, what is it that we do which can sort of, you could say, drain us away, you know, drain away our energy, drain away our happiness, drain away our kind of spiritual goodness? Those would be outlets. So just a quick example here. There's been this new video game that got released. I won't say its name, but like within a few days, they had something like 800,000 people all playing it together online. And, you know, that's like a big city, you know, like what the population of Taiping here would be, what, like 200,000, 250,000? Imagine four Taipings where every single person in it, every man, woman, and child, all got that video game and all played it all at the same time. You know, the whole city times four, you know? Everyone just went wild for this new game. So that's an outlet for sure. You know, anything that, it might be fun for the first little while, but when the game gets you playing very obsessively over all these little details, you know, collecting the little gold pieces and getting a better sword and getting better armor and getting the treasure from the dungeon and all this stuff. And, you know, you really get into these games, you know. The games are very sophisticated. They have a term for this called grinding, where you just keep playing and keep playing, keep playing, just to get more things in the game, more. You're not even really having fun anymore. You're just grinding away. And there are people who admit this. Oh, yeah, I like to grind. You know, this is kind of a good word to them. I would say from a Buddhist point of view, no, don't do that. That's an outlet in your life for sure. Energy's going out and you're not really getting anything back for that, which we could call spiritually praiseworthy. One will just feel stressed, tired afterwards from all that thinking and all that energy that it takes just to play the game carefully. You know, one is just kind of gets you in a trance almost, you know? Anyway, so those are outlets for sure. When I was younger, I'll admit I played quite a lot of video games, but those older video games back from those times, like this would be, you know, kind of the 1990s, early 2000s, games were simpler then. Usually you could just sit down and play for half an hour or an hour. You could finish most games in like an hour, hour and a half. A really long game might take like 5 hours or something. But the games, the really fancy games they have now, you know, they take like 100 hours, like hundreds of hours. And they're proud of this. They're like, oh yeah, if you buy our game, this will keep you busy for like 1,000 hours. And this is like something you want. You're like, okay, this better give me that many hours, or, you know. I want a lot of hours for my money. You know what I mean? But I say, no. Those games that took 1 hour, those are the kind. If you're going to play anything, if your kids are going to play any games, you know, could it be the kind that just take 1 hour? Not like 1,000, you know? Okay, anyway, outlets, things that cost a lot of time, okay, and energy. You don't really give you anything back. You don't really come away from it enriched, you know? Okay, so this analogy makes us think over what in our life is an inlet and what's an outlet. And then be careful how we spend our time. And then if we can meditate, if we can attain samadhi, that's like the rain that fills up the reservoir. And you want that to overflow. You want that to overflow. And yeah, this flying dream I had, the teacher made that point in the dream about, like, you want the reservoir full and you want it overflowing, and that's how you can fly. Okay? Okay, so I'll leave it there.